Welcome to Let's Talk Death, conversations to inform and inspire. Let's Talk Death is being brought to you by Heal Grief, a nonprofit providing the tools and resources to support one's journey with grief. We seek to empower individuals to achieve a healthy post-bereavement growth. Everything we do is inspired by our core belief that no one should ever grieve alone. Let's Talk Death is a series of conversations with some amazing people from various fields. Our goal through these conversations is to normalize, educate, and demystify the taboo around death, dying, and the journey of grief. Hello, welcome to this episode of Let's Talk Death. I'm Fran Solomon.
And I'm Andy McNeil.
And we are thrilled to be your host for these conversations.
Our guest today is Kara Bowman. Kara is a licensed marriage and family therapist who specializes in grief and trauma. Years after achieving an MBA and a career in finance, Kara returned to school to earn a master's in counseling psychology. She did her internships primarily in hospice grief counseling. Today, Kara is a certified grief counselor, a certified clinical trauma professional, and a certified thanatologist. Her passion is to help create a more compassionate and helpful culture toward those who are grieving. Kara is dedicated to her career and community through her practice and volunteer work. Her method includes ritual, poetry, meditations, and visualizations, along with talking. Kara has a private practice in Scotts Valley, California. In the summer of 2020, the Association of Marriage and Family Therapists honored Kara's practice with a spotlight in the Therapist magazine. Kara, we are delighted to have you as a guest on our show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you so much for the important work you do of talking about grief, which is not something that's done well in our culture.
Thank you. And we're definitely going to do that now. So before we get into your work, you went from finance to bereavement care. How did that transition happen? Did you have a personal death loss experience yourself?
I did. I was like a lot of people. I went into a career young without knowing what I was doing. And I was in middle age trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life that had a little bit more meaning. And then my family was hit by an almost unbelievable string of tragedies in a five-year period. Our best friends were murdered. We lost people to, two close people to cancer, one to an accident, a tree fell on him, one to suicide, one to MS. And in the same five-year period, my husband was diagnosed with cancer and two of my three children were diagnosed with cancer. Yes. And my children are doing fine. They're cured. My husband is still struggling with it, but he's doing fine at the moment. So you could say I struggled with loss. So I'm usually a planner, but a friend of mine said she was going back to school to become a therapist, and I felt jealous and I realized that that's what I wanted to do and went back to school on a whim without researching it at all and did my first practicum in grief counseling and immediately knew that that's what I wanted to do. I viscerally understood the people. I could put what they were feeling into words before they even had words for it, before they even had ideas or concepts for what they were feeling. And I really got people. So I pursued that. And then I also pursued trauma because so many people who needed help with grief also had some sort of trauma either involved in their grief or in their past, which was why they were having trouble with their grief. Mm-hmm. And I found that those two went really well hand in hand and have continued in that career, both helping individuals and in training others to work with people.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned the trauma. We've worked with addiction rehabilitation firms, and the sense that we're getting is that
Most addiction, not all, but many addictive behaviors are a result of a traumatic event that was unresolved. And if you dive down even further than that, usually the traumatic event is a death loss.
That's often the case. Dr. Gabor Maté has a phrase that I love. He works with addiction, and he says to people when they come in, not what's wrong with you, but what happens to you. It's a beautiful, compassionate way of looking at people.
Very much so. Is it the architects of the ACEs study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, very much said that same thing. I think originally they were working in an obesity clinic and noticed that half of the people who were enrolled in the program dropped out of the program.
Yes.
And in following up with that, they realized we're asking the wrong question again. Right. Not what's wrong with you. What happened to you? Yes. It's a powerful question to ask a person. Yeah.
It's a very powerful question. The ACEs study, I have a little problem with, because people might not know what that is. It's some research that was done around childhood trauma, and it was done narrowly as a research tool. And it's now used often as a diagnostic tool to see if people had trauma in their childhood. And because it was designed narrowly, there's all kinds of childhood trauma that it doesn't catch. There are all kinds of people who are walking around with developmental trauma, trauma of needs, emotional needs not getting met in childhood, that don't show up in that tool. Where that intersects with grief is that if you have developmental trauma in childhood, emotional needs not met by parents, often because parents don't know how, they're wounded too, then you develop coping mechanisms that are harmful to yourself and harmful to others. It can be anger, it can be denial of feelings, it can be substance abuse. And then when an external stressor such as grief comes along, you'll go to those coping mechanisms because that's all you know. You didn't develop healthy ways of dealing with emotion. So most people can get through normal loss and grief without help and support, with the help and support of their family and friends and their coping mechanisms. But if they have any sort of developmental trauma or traumatic incidents that haven't been resolved, then they often need external help and support. Yeah. So you did mention that one of the ways I work is through poetry. I wrote a book of poetry, and I can share a poem if you'd like about
that.
About it's about how to grieve if you haven't learned from your parents how to experience emotions. It's called Love. It says, take good care of your precious pain. Wrap your strong arms around it. Hold it against your warm chest. Rock it gently, telling it softly that it is loved. It is needed. It is important. It makes perfect sense. And love it just as it is in all of its agonizing beauty.
That's so very much, and it captures, as you said, being able to, it speaks truth to people's experience. Let's put it that way, and it that's, to me, the best type of communication, whether it's through art or through poetry or through writing. It's when someone hears it and gets it. And feels gotten by someone. I can't say enough about people's need to feel as though someone gets their experience and validates that experience, and how therapeutic that is for a person when that happens.
It is. There's something magical about it. I don't know exactly what it is. I can't put my finger on it. There's a Swedish proverb that says, let me get this right. Joy shared is a double joy. Sorrow shared is half a sorrow.
Let's Talk Death is being brought to you by Heal Grief, a 501c3. As a nonprofit, we are reliant on the kind generosity of our donors. If you are inspired by our mission, we ask you to go to healgrief.org/donations to help us continue our great work. No gift is too small.
I'm curious, as you just the work that you've done, and even the transition from a career in finance and now made that move. Is there anything that surprised you in just your study, you know, as you pursued the degree, or anything in that process that was maybe aha moments, whatever it might have been? Is there something that stands out in that transition?
So many things surprised me. One of the things that surprised me, I don't know if I have words for it, is life is lived on two levels. We're going around talking and interacting up here, and people are living in their hearts down here. And so rarely are we connecting on a real, authentic level about what our truth is. Some people aren't even connecting with themselves about their own truth.
I was about to say, right, that, yeah.
And I think in this work, we are fortunate that we get to connect more often with people in a very real way. And some jobs are like that. Therapy is one of the jobs that's like that. I crave that. And I think a lot of people really crave that. And there are so few opportunities for that in our world.
Kara, it's so funny you say that, because I always say with my family, speak from your truth.
Hmm.
Don't point any fingers. Nobody did anything one way or another. Just speak from your truth. How did you feel? Mm-hmm. You know, speak your truth. So it's so funny you say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's wonderful that you're teaching that.
I'm trying. Let me ask you, your work with NBC Compassionate Communication, you're a trainer. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Compassionate Communication was started by Marshall Rosenberg in the 70s. And he saw that in our language, we often are using power language. We're jockeying for position. And he saw that some people didn't do that. Some people used connecting language. And he developed this way of not listening to all of the words up here, but listening to people's heart. So they didn't have to know how to speak from their hearts in order for you to listen to their hearts. So it's listening. It's the idea is that when anybody is ever talking, when they're flapping their lips, they're trying to communicate something important. And so you listen for their values, you listen for their needs, you listen for what they're yearning for. And that's always connecting. That's never in conflict. And if you can learn to speak that way, you're more likely to be heard. So I just took a workshop, read a book, was interested and kept going and became a trainer in that. And I still teach that sometimes and use that in my therapy practice. And it's a wonderful connecting way. It's also used to help people negotiate conflict. So it's been used, for example, with Israelis and Palestinians and other warring parties to help people connect. And the idea is that we have universal human values. And if you can get to those universal human values, then people will understand each other.
It's almost like not only speaking your truth, but interpreting someone's truth.
Exactly. Exactly. You can actually help others do that. If you know language, mm-hmm. It's very helpful in grief too, because often people, in order to deflect feeling the really painful, hard feelings, they'll go to anger or they'll go to denial or they'll do something else. And so you can reach down in there to what's behind the words, the coping mechanisms.
Yeah, and what's often we, you know, hear, you know, such an angry person. Well, they're not even sure what they're angry about. There's something that's missed, you know, and it's being able to pull that out and to understand it, to process it.
Right, right. A wonderful question to ask is, what would you have to feel that you don't want to feel if you let go of that? If you let go of the blame or the self-blame, what would you have to feel? And often it's just deep despair, sadness, or fear that you can't control.
Overwhelming grief.
Overwhelming grief.
Yeah. It reminds me, a number of years ago, I I did a group with some juvenile youth, youth in juvenile detention. And all of them have been arrested for grand theft auto or attempted robbery or things like that. And it was interesting as I went in, I wanted to get to what was beyond, right? What was out in the open. And we actually did some chalk drawings with them, created an area for them to do this. And one of the security guards even looked at me coming in and he said, "What are you going to do, drawing with these guys?" You know, and so almost laughing about it. And I said, "You know, if you want to stick around, you're welcome to stick around." And basically I allowed them to come up with their own colors and what those colors meant. And these young men took that chalk and they created, it was unbelievable what they created that spoke their truth. And then watched each one of them go around and get beyond the anger and the, you know, the other things that were the things that were more easy for them to project into the world, and begin to talk about why they were where they were in their life. And it was interesting, on the way out, the security guard looked at me and he went, "I think I owe you an apology." He said, "That was something else, you know," because I say all that to say that I agree with you. And I think that people long for that connection, yes, but they don't often have it in their life. And so they go after things that keep that at bay, because there's nowhere to put those deep seated experiences and emotions in a safe way.
Exactly. What further complicates things is nowadays, especially young adults, they grew up on a device. Language is almost obsolete.
Yes, people don't know how. We have a very judgmental culture, so there aren't a lot of safe spaces.
Yeah.
And there aren't a lot of people teaching how to deal with emotions. People, you talked about overwhelming grief. People don't often have the experience of feeling difficult emotions and realizing that they'll pass. And right. So if you don't have that experience over and over again, then, and you're grieving, then you want to hold it at bay, or your experience in the detention center, people want to hold difficult experiences away from themselves because they don't realize that they're strong enough and resilient enough to feel them and that they will pass.
Yeah, you're right. They don't want to feel vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Because there's that lack of safe space to be vulnerable. Yeah.
And they just haven't had the experience of being vulnerable and feeling better afterward. So they don't know what that's like.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Kara, we're almost out of time. This has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for this. Before we leave our time together, though, people who are joining us typically want to know how they can connect with our guests. How might they connect with you and with your work?
I have a website. It's karabowman.com, karabowman.com. And I also have a book of poetry, Heartbreak to Hope, Poems of Support for Grief and Loss, which is available anywhere books are sold.
Wonderful. Kara, we want to thank you again for being a guest here at Let's Talk Death and for sharing your journey. It's been remarkable.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the work you do, both of you.
Thank you.
If you would like to learn more about Heal Grief, visit us at healgrief.org. To find other conversations or to inquire about becoming a guest speaker, visit us at healgrief.org/Let's Talk Death. And if you feel inspired to support us, remember, no gift is too small. Visit us at healgrief.org/donations, or you can donate right through our homepage. Well, that's it until next time on Let's Talk Death, where we normalize, educate, and demystify the taboo around death, dying, and the journey of grief.